Welcome to Food for Thought. I'm Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks, which I founded to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting CompassionateCooks.com. Let's talk about protein. Where do you get your protein? Where do you get your protein? Where do you get your protein? If I had a nickel for every time someone asked me, where do you get your protein? I would be a very wealthy vegetarian. And so would every vegetarian, because it's the most commonly asked question. The idea that we can't get enough protein on a vegetarian diet is not true, and that's what we're going to talk about today. One thing I want to say before we get started is I applaud people for asking questions about health and nutrition, because we have a lot to learn. We certainly don't do very well in this arena, and we can do a lot better. So I'm glad people are asking questions about how they can eat better and thrive. But I want to just get rid of this idea that vegetarians have to worry about this and non-vegetarians have to worry about that. And this whole dichotomy between vegetarians and non-vegetarians, you know, everybody, human beings, need to make sure they're getting the nutrients they require, not only to be healthy, but to thrive. We can make so many improvements in this area, and I want everybody to ask these questions. So don't wait until you're confronted with vegetarianism. Just ask this question all the time: is what can I do to improve my diet? What improvements can I make? So let's just keep that in mind as we talk about nutrition and health overall. So protein obviously is important. It's a very important nutrient, but it's a non-issue. And I think I'd like to start with the American Dietetic Association's position paper on vegetarianism. You can certainly access this online, but this excerpt right here is specifically about protein. So let me just read this for you. Plant protein can meet requirements when a variety of plant foods is consumed and energy needs are met. Energy needs are calories, making sure we take in enough calories. Research indicates that an assortment of plant foods eaten over the course of a day can provide all essential amino acids. Thus, complementary proteins do not need to be consumed at the same meal. What does that mean? Complementary proteins. The idea that we had to sit down at one meal and combine certain foods to get a complete protein was started by a book called Diet for a Small Planet, written by Frances Moore LePay in the early 1970s. And she popularized this idea of combining proteins at each meal based on the fact that all protein is made up of amino acids. Okay, all proteins, all plant proteins have some form of amino acid. Some just have higher amounts of certain amino acids than others. For instance, beans are lower in methionine and grains are lower in lysine. So the idea that we have to sit down and combine grains and beans at one meal to get a complete protein was what Frances Moore LePay was referring to. But she said in the next edition of her book that it wasn't true, that we don't have to sit down and do this, that as long as we're eating a variety of foods, like the ADA says, our bodies are smart enough to synthesize all of the amino acids and to give us the amount of protein that we need. We just don't have to do it in one meal. Now, that means we don't want to eat potato chips all day. We don't want to have junk food all day. But as long as we're eating a variety of plant foods, we don't have to worry about it. I've heard Frances Moore LePay say that if you want to compliment your food, just say something nice about it. Okay, so that's the idea of complementary proteins. Now, there are ways to consume too little protein, but we're not exactly a country of people who consume too little of anything, right? We don't have diseases of deficiency here. We have diseases of excess. So what are some ways in which people would not meet their protein needs? Well, if they're not meeting their energy needs, right? So if you're not eating, you know, and people who have anorexia, depression, poverty, lack of appetite due to illness, extreme dieting. I mean, these are cases where people aren't getting enough calories, so they're not getting enough protein. And this isn't just people who are vegetarian. Obviously, these diseases or these experiences inflict everybody, or have the potential to inflict everybody, regardless of how you're eating. One thing I mentioned before about what does protein deficiency look like? Well, there is a technical scientific term for protein deficiency, and it's called kwashiorkor. That's kwashiorkor, kwashiorkor. And it's the disease we see in countries where there's rampant poverty, so they don't have enough food. Those images of children we've seen them on television where their bellies are distended and their skin is discolored. That's what protein deficiency looks like. Now think for a moment, if you know anybody who has kwashiorkor in this country, we don't, okay? not only do we not have kwashiorkor, so protein deficiency, certainly to this extreme, what true protein deficiency is, doesn't exist in this country, doesn't exist in vegetarians. People are getting way more protein than is required, and that's causing a lot of problems as well. What are some of those problems? Well, excess protein, animal protein in particular, has been linked with cancer, gout, kidney problems like kidney stones, osteoporosis, because the protein is literally leaching the calcium from our bones, and some other problems as well. So we're getting way more protein than we need. Here are some facts for you. So relative to total calorie intake, we need only 5 to 6% of dietary protein to replace the protein that our body excretes. Okay, so relative to total calorie intake, we need about 5 to 6% of protein. Well, what is the recommended daily allowance? For the past 50 years, the recommended daily allowance is 9 to 10%. And they just increase the number just to make sure that most people are getting at least that 5 to 6%. Okay, so we got 5 to 6% required by our bodies, 9 to 10% recommended by the government. And what are Americans consuming? Well, Americans consume protein within the range of 11 to 21%. With an average of about 15 to 16%. So that's pretty high. Okay, so 11 to 21%, 15 to 16%, way higher than the 5 to 6 even required by our bodies. And like I said, that's causing a lot of problems. So we want to just decrease the amount of certainly animal protein that we're consuming. And what are some high protein foods in the plant kingdom? Obviously, some foods are higher in protein than others. Well, those are legumes, beans, peanuts, soy foods such as tofu or tempeh, and nuts. Obviously, those are all high protein foods, but grains and vegetables also contribute a significant amount of protein. We're never taught that broccoli has protein and oatmeal has protein. There's protein in your bagel. There's protein even in your carrot. One medium carrot has about a half a gram of protein. The point being that, you know, all plant foods have protein. And I just hope that people understand that there's a reason we've been taught that meat, dairy, and eggs are the only sources of protein. I don't know of any broccoli lobby out there, but they certainly don't have the money that the meat, dairy, and egg industry has. And they're the ones convincing us that we need to consume a lot of protein and that protein should be in the form of meat or animal products. So think about it. Think about the largest and the strongest animals on the planet, giraffes and elephants and buffalo and gorillas, and think about what they eat. They're vegetarian animals. They get all of their protein from plants. And our physiology resembles herbivores way more than it resembles carnivorous animals. So next time someone says to you, "You're as strong as an ox," you can say, "Well, of course I am, because I eat my plant protein." All right, so you get the idea. Eat your vegetables and enjoy.